Scripps, of course, bought MetroPulse back in 07, and we were, to some extent, controlled by the New Sentinel branch of Scripps. The New Sentinel itself did not engage with us, but they did set these sales goals for us that we sometimes hit and sometimes didn't, advertising sales goals. It was not something that I ever heard very much about. And we were actually doing pretty well. In our early years, we always lost money. In recent years, we were actually making money. And I think the last figure I heard was $150,000 that we were earning for the Scripps Corporation. Sounds like a lot of money to me, but it's not a lot of money for a corporation. And we weren't hitting that goal. And that was the reason we were told that that they were shutting MetroPulse down.
How much notice did you get that they were even thinking of shutting you down?
A few seconds. I heard that there was a meeting at 1 o'clock. We were told that they were shutting us down completely. They weren't selling us. They were just shutting the thing down. In fact, they were unplugging our computers. We didn't have access to anything we'd been working on. I've heard of this happening to people facing criminal charges, but I'd never even gotten a bad performance review or anything. For all I knew, they were happy with what I was doing. And to suddenly be locked out of your office and then to face a severance agreement that demands that you not work in journalism for a year if you accept the severance is extreme.
Did any of the higher-ups address why it was so quick?
Patrick Birmingham, the publisher at Scripps and New Sentinel, told us it was strictly Scripps policy, and they had nothing to say about it, that was their corporate policy, that's the way they always handle things when they shut down papers.
So how many writers were we talking about who were there?
We had 5 staff writers at the very end, but that was a pretty lean group, 5 of us. At one time, MetroPulse had 8 or 9 staff writers.
Are you bringing all 5 back?
3 of them. We got kind of a core team of Corey Turzin, the editor who kind of helped start MetroPulse and got its reputation going in the 1990s, is with us. And Matthew Everett, who's also been associated with MetroPulse for 15 years or so, began as an intern back in the 90s.
Tell us what the new project is.
We're starting a new newspaper, and we hope it'll take the place of MetroPulse. It won't be MetroPulse, but it'll be something hitting a lot of the same marks that MetroPulse did. For one thing, we were surprised, very positively surprised, with the public outcry of support, and that came from a lot of unexpected quarters, including philanthropy. There were philanthropists in Knoxville who said, "The city really needs something like MetroPulse. And what can we do?" And we started thinking in terms that we hadn't thought about before. But we also heard from advertisers who were angry about this and really wanted something in paper. There are some models for this. In fact, they're purely nonprofit models for journalism. And the more we heard from advertisers, the more we went for the newspaper model. We're going to have a website too, and apps and that sort of thing. But we're going to have it in paper too, and make it weekly right away. We're starting a new nonprofit called the Knoxville History Project, something I'm going to be personally in charge of. It promotes the history of the city of Knoxville. We'll be cooperating with the East Tennessee Historical Society. The newspaper will be a for-profit subsidiary of the nonprofit Knoxville History Project.
Gotcha. What's the new paper called?
It'll be called the Knoxville Mercury. It's a historic name for a Knoxville paper, but I think we're more inspired by the by H.L. Mencken's American Mercury, the great paper of the early 20th century, and did not bow to any sacred cows. But also there are other associations with the word mercury that we like. And it's also just a classic American newspaper name.
Let's talk a little bit more about the History Project.
It's going to be an organization that people can come to when they need a speaker for a school group, or a tour for a tourist group, or when journalists are in town, we can talk to them. And also I'll be writing stuff, helping with research. Our mission, I think, overlaps with several other nonprofits. There's never, ever been a Knoxville history organization that I know of, anything to promote the history of the city of Knoxville. And here we have a 225-year-old city with a really interesting history that's unique and unlike any other city in America. It's certainly influenced by its region, Appalachia, East Tennessee, but it has its own history too. And this will try to bridge the gaps between the existing arts and culture organizations, all of whom I've worked with over the years, and I know all of whom have history-oriented projects now and then that they need help with, whether it's research or a speaker for an event, or somebody to talk to kids. The city that I grew up in, Knoxville, was not all that interested in its history that I could tell. But now there's a great deal of interest in history, and you can see it in all the new places downtown that all evoke Knoxville history in one way or another. Even the, you know, from the new buildings like the Regal Riviera, which uses the name of a theater that was built there in the 20s, to the new Five Bar restaurant, which has a whole big wall of portraits of Knoxville icons, you know, from Cormac McCarthy to Johnny Majors. People are really interested in Knoxville history in a way that they were not 20 or 30 years ago, and I think that there's a much greater demand for this